Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about Season 5, Episode 8, titled Bagman. Alexis, what did you think of this episode?
It was a little dry, but I liked it.
God, that joke was a little dry.
Immediately.
And now I'm salty.
Oh, just like a button-down shirt in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was very good. It didn't blow my mind like it seemed to blow a lot of the internet's mind. This episode was really hyped up. And
yeah.
I think it was kind of unwarranted because all the hype that I saw like coming from the actual people involved in making it was not around like how, you know, this is a game changer for the story or these characters are going to have totally different perspectives coming out of this. It was more like this was a really hard episode for us to make because it involved a lot of stuff. Like the shootout was a significant investment of time and effort. And so I think that got audience expectations a little high. And then I think a lot of people are just trying to look at this episode and go, well, I was told that this is supposed to be a major episode. And I need it to be that somehow. Like, I don't feel like the reaction is matching the episode, in my opinion, because this is not as exciting to me as like last episode where Jimmy and Kim are getting married. Like the episode before that, the ending of that was a mind blower where Kim suggests that they get married. To me, that's the kind of thing that makes me go, ooh, wow, this episode was a standout. This episode, not so much to me, but it was good. Like I was definitely involved, like engage with the whole thing.
Is it because we've already seen something very similar in Breaking Bad?
I mean, yeah, that 4 days out or 5 days, however many days out. I was definitely looking at this episode through that lens the whole time. And, you know, that was a great episode. I think this is a very strong episode, too. But, yeah, it was maybe a little bit tainted by that.
I could see that.
Because I kind of kept expecting it to happen, and when they started foreshadowing things where it was like, oh, they're pouring water on shoes and stuff, I knew what they were going to do already, and so it wasn't a huge surprise. And I don't really think that this fundamentally changed much, although I do have some, you know, questions about how characters are going to react. So there's that. Maybe we could talk about that later.
I think the things that really changed mostly happened in the beginning third of the episode or quarter of the episode, and the rest is the Mike and Saul roadshow.
Yeah, which does have consequences.
It does have consequences, but it's different than what I feel like I picked up in the beginning of the episode. But
and at this point, I'm starting to wonder, everybody talks about like when is the moment that Saul appeared on screen, right? Or like when did you turn on Walter White? I kind of feel at this point we should start talking about when we lost sympathy for Kim. Because we know who Jimmy is, and she knows who Jimmy is, and she keeps getting herself deeper into this in order to stay with him, in order to please him, whatever is driving her to keep this relationship going is, at this point, something that we have to talk about seriously. Like, you would sit her down and say, why are you doing this, Kim?
Yeah, I can see how her thinking with the marriage might have gone, because to her, contracts are golden. They're the highest standard of everything. She lives for contracts, and that is what a marriage is a contract. You are agreeing to these terms together. Although, to be fair, he didn't say that he wouldn't work with the cartel. He just said that he would tell her everything, and he did.
But she also knows that this is a very bad idea to get involved with, A, this man, Jimmy, and B, the life that he's going to obviously be living, you know?
Yeah, there are plenty. The road to here is strewn with red flags. Absolutely. She knows the kind of person he is. And this does kind of make me think that she is more that kind of person than we thought she was.
Yeah. It's tough to watch because I like him a lot.
Me too.
The episode, I think, certainly has to change Saul as well. When you look at him out in the desert, cowering in fear as the cartel is slinging bullets right past him, you have to think, This is a guy who hasn't seen much action. This is a guy who prefers being in parking lots, hawking cell phones.
He's been able to talk himself out of most major things before they happen.
Yeah.
Except for getting beat up at one time. But that wasn't that serious. And this time it didn't work. Nobody cares that you're an avocado. Avocado, sorry.
An avocado, yeah.
I said thank you in Portuguese. That's not right. It's lawyer in Spanish. Abogado.
Yeah, which we'll talk about that when we get to it, because that's pretty hilarious. There are some really funny things in this episode, too, but maybe we should start with the recap.
Let's do it.
All right, so the cousins show up at a cartel warehouse and load a bunch of money into the bags, and someone calls someone else to say he has something for them if they're still interested, which we don't really know what's going on at this point, but by the end, I think we understand.
These boys are so shiny, head to toe.
They sure are.
Shiny heads, shiny shirts, shiny suits.
It's a good thing they didn't get stuck out in the desert with Mike and Saul, because they would have spotted them.
They are so miles away. Absolutely.
Yeah. What are they going to take their boots off? Walk through the desert with no boots?
There's not a prairie hole, a prairie dog hole big enough to hide these boys.
I couldn't help but notice that they're cleaning a Cadillac out in the beginning of this. Like, we know that Saul eventually ends up driving a Cadillac with white leather interior. It's not a convertible, you know. I was wondering if this was going to be like, it's sort of a gift from Lalo for the extra, you know, the hazard pay or something. But I don't think so, because it's convertible. Unless they deconvert it, it's probably not his.
Yeah, I think this is just bait. Also, the casualness of these guys who are cleaning the car, flicking blood water at each other. That's gross.
That's cartel, baby.
That, yep.
This looked like straight like a scene out of Gone in 60 Seconds, with all these fancy cars around. And like, this is them, you know, bringing them back to the warehouse, packing them onto the boat or whatever. I guess these places probably exist. They've got dresses. They've got a lot of fancy chandeliers. They've got a horse statue, probably of an indigenous person being run through or something. I don't know.
It's like the granddaddy of antique restore shops.
Yeah.
It feels like.
So Lalo instructs Saul how to pick up his bail money. And Saul tries to wriggle out of having to transport the cash. Lalo acts like he's going to let Saul off the hook, which I think he might have been willing to. But Saul is too tempted by the money, and he asks for $100,000 to complete the job.
Yep, and that's his newest huge number that he can't possibly pay. But of course, he's the fucking cartel. I mean, if he can pay $7 million to get himself out, then why couldn't he be able to afford $100,000?
And we saw the stacks and stacks of cash in the cartel stash house. So, yeah, there's a ton of money there. And Lalo, of course, you know, pretends to mull this over. $100,000, a lot of money. You can see it on his face. And then, of course, he just says, yeah, done.
Tony Dalton is so good at playing this casual bastard, basically. This con artist who has climbed his way to the top of the family. I enjoyed him giggling at the newspaper. That was good.
Yeah, what's that all about? I don't even know.
There was an article talking about how the burning down of the Los Pollos restaurant was an arson.
Okay.
They gotcha. Was it ruled to be an arson because of all the cut up seats and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was giggling at it. Because that's Lalo.
Makes sense.
And he said Saul would not get the joke. What do you make of Saul suggesting Nacho for the job and Lalo saying that a guy like that with that much money could be real dumb real fast? Does he know that Nacho is a flight risk? Is also a flight risk? Do you think?
I'm not certain. Because I was thinking about that, like, why doesn't he want Nacho to do this? I almost wonder if it's not that Nacho is worth too much to him right now, because like, if anything happens to Nacho on this run, who steps up to carry out the operations of the Salamanca portion of the cartel's work?
whoever's better than Crazy Eight, I guess.
Right, yeah. Well, we don't know who that is.
Right.
You know, they'd have to establish a whole new character, and it'd be, you know, they could do it. But yeah, I'm thinking it's half like, oh, Nacho's too valuable to lose, and if they lose Saul, who gives a shit, right?
Yeah, it's a fair point.
But also, yeah, maybe half like, well, Nacho's a criminal. Maybe he doesn't totally trust Nacho. Like, one hand of poker is not going to change your complete mind on somebody, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it could be both.
Yeah, I was just curious if he was starting to suspect him.
Okay, next scene, Jimmy's taking an evening shower and tells Kim that he has some things he's got to do, among which is to get the bail money for Lalo. And Kim is horrified by him being a bagman for the cartel. Appropriately so. I don't know how much more plainly Kim can speak to Jimmy. Because, I mean, when she talks to Jimmy, she's talking to him like a fifth grader. She's saying, I don't like this. I don't want you to do it. Like, how much more can she stress to Jimmy that what he's doing is upsetting her?
She can't. She has said it as clearly as she possibly could. She's drawn her line in the sand, mm-hmm. and that is why her face is nearly horrified when he crosses that line to hug her and tell her that he'll be fine, because he says he will be.
Right.
He stopped using contractions a while ago, so he's definitely telling the truth.
No, this is the scene where I just go, how much more of this can this relationship take? Like, they just got married. Not even a few days later, Jimmy's already crossing a line. It seems like at some point, soon, very soon, Kim is going to have to just end this thing.
As soon as Kim gets home, she is checking the mail and she flops down on the bed to read this letter. And as she is reading it, her face falls. Jimmy just happens to be explaining how deep in the shit he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell if her face... I know why her face is falling. I can't tell if she knew what was going on before he said what was going on, based on what she had read in that letter. I have a very strong suspicion, and I'm probably going to be proven wrong, but whatever. I think she might be a CI. I think the first time that...
Huh.
Sorry, yeah, this might be kind of tinfoil, but I think the first time that he told her or intimated to her that he might be involved with the cartel, I think she immediately went to the police.
Wow.
That would be crazy if it were true. I kind of want it to be true a little bit because it's so fucking dramatic.
I mean, it's a betrayal on par with everything Jimmy's done. So,
yeah.
You know, turnabout's fair play.
And it's a betrayal that would protect him, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be
maybe
why
her
she
as
would
well.
Do it, yeah.
Because, like, everything I see in this episode is her getting deeper and deeper. Now the cartel knows who she is. She's... Yeah, I don't know. She's defending Jimmy. Jimmy's just going to keep getting more trouble. It's going dark places.
She also knows Lalo's name later on, and there's no reason for her to know that.
Yeah, they make it pretty clear in this scene that they have talked off screen because she uses the name Salamanca in this scene, and Jimmy doesn't bat an eye about it. Like he's not like, oh, how'd you find out that name? I never told you that name, so... It's pretty obvious they've talked off screen in very specific terms about who this man is, his relationship to the cartel, all those kinds of things. Okay, so we go out to the well where Saul meets with the cousins and picks up the cash, and then the cousins leave and he starts driving home. He is unfortunately stopped by a bunch of guys with guns, and they go to take the money and kill Saul, but a sniper opens fire on them, killing them all, and it turns out to be Mike. Like, we didn't immediately realize when the first shot rang out who that would be.
Mm-hmm.
The guy with the history of sniping on this show.
There was no hiding it.
No. There's a lot of stuff they're doing in this scene that I enjoyed. Although, like I said, and, you know, this is a lot like Vince Gilligan. And he directed this episode, by the way, if you didn't know that. That is a little heavy-handed. A little ham-fisted. Perhaps he got the bacon gauntlet out for this one and really drove home the foreshadowing on using the water to clean his shoes. There is some foreshadowing that maybe is a little more subtle that I liked with the cousins driving up kind of full speed straight at Saul in the Porsche. And, you know, that sort of being foreshadowing for the ending of this episode where Saul almost gets run over by the guy chasing them. But yeah, it's a little much with the water on his shoes, I thought.
It's good for the characterization of Saul because he is in the desert and it's hot, but he still cares enough to rinse the dirt off of his stupid shoes.
It would have to be cheap shoes. I mean, those are not fancy looking loafers.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they weren't falling apart by the time he gets out of this place. If he does, spoiler alert, he does. We know he does.
I mean, obviously, yeah.
But I would agree. It is a little heavy-handed. My point of contention for how heavy-handed this scene is comes in the form of Mike saying that the alternator is shot. Literally.
Yeah.
That was a little...
Come on, Mike.
You know what else was shot? His coffee mug.
That's true. His world's second greatest lawyer again, coffee mug.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do have other questions. Does Saul... So, Chuck, back in season 2, maybe, described Jimmy with a law degree as a chimp with a machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me that Saul seems to view Jimmy with a law degree as a chimp with body armor, because he almost seems like if he just says, I'm a lawyer, it's impossible that anything bad is going to happen to him in this scene. Like, that's his, what would have been his final words had Mike not, you know, taken matters into his hands. He would have just been saying avocado in the desert over and over again, thinking that they somehow wouldn't put a bullet in him because he was a lawyer.
I don't know if he actually thought that would work or if he was just clinging to the last desperate thing in Spanish that he could say.
Yeah, it's just telling that the last thing he can think of is, I'm a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. Why are you doing this? I'm a lawyer.
Yeah.
Well, he views that as some sort of shield from consequences. And
in a lot of ways, it is in normal life.
Right. But it's also giving him a license to do worse and worse things constantly because he doesn't feel like there are going to be consequences for his actions.
So he can law his way out of everything. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if he can't law his way out, he can, you know,
con his way out,
or I don't know, guilt or sympathy his way out.
Mm-hmm.
Make people feel bad for him. It's
give a big puppy dog eyes. Yeah.
He has a lot of tricks in his bag, but none of them are working here.
Nope.
So the bigger question, I guess, is why would Gus send Mike in to protect Lalo's money, his bail money specifically? My first thought on this is that Gus probably wants Lalo out of prison so that he will run across, he'll tuck tail and run to Mexico now that the heat is really on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if he makes bail here, he's on a timer, he's on a clock at the very least, because then he's eventually got a trial he's got to go to, right? And he's almost certainly going to be convicted of this murder, I would think, but maybe not. Maybe he could, you know, actually go to trial and win it with an underhanded lawyer like Saul. But my guess is he wants Lalo to get bail, skip town back to Mexico, and freeing up Gus to continue running his operation without interference.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I don't know if I think Lalo might be aware of that on some level. Although he does say to Saul in this episode something about the people still want him in prison.
He's been running the
whole show from prison anyway. It's not like prison has changed anything as far as the Salamanca operations go. I mean, look at what's happened while Lala's in prison. The chicken joint has been burned down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Gus definitely doesn't really want him out of prison, but I think he wants him out of prison long enough for Lalo to get out of town.
Yeah, I can see that. Also, he might be easier. It might be easier for him to have an accident that is not connected to Gus once he is back in Mexico.
Sure. Yeah. Or once he's out, you know, you could see like a rival gang in New Mexico being blamed or something. But if you just say, well, we sent a bunch of guys in prison to go kill him,
mm-hmm.
who would have incentive to do that? It's probably Gus.
Fair.
So then we move over to Mike and Saul driving back to the ABQ, but the car breaks down because they decided to take the shittiest steam. Well, because Saul decided to take his shittiest steam into the desert,
yeah.
Which barely starts on the best of days.
Mm-hmm.
In the 100 plus degree heat of the desert, you really think this shitty car is going
to
make it?
We have never seen this man take this car to a mechanic. So God no. only knows what other problems were lurking beneath the surface.
There's something off about the gas cap, I'm pretty sure. Because Mike grabs that up and then he shoves Saul's car off a cliff. Then they get off the road and begin walking through the desert where they stop under a tree. Saul wants to leave the money there because the bags are very heavy. But the guy that got away is still looking for them, and he'd never be able to find that money again. So question about that gas cap thing. Mm-hmm. Why does Mike grab it? Does he do so because he doesn't want the cops to find it? Does he do so, which I, spoiler alert, I think this is the answer here, so that Gus can find him and pick him up?
Yeah, that would be my thinking.
Yeah.
If it were tagged. We didn't actually see him open it up. We don't know that it is tagged, but it seems crazy that it wouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, Gus... So Mike's familiar with, you know, the systems that they use, but also now he's working for Gus, right? So mm-hmm. I would think that Gus would have told him, yeah, we got a tag on Mike or on Saul, so pick that thing up.
Yeah.
But I mean, at this point, Saul doesn't have a car, and we know he gets a Cadillac at some point, and he's maybe, I don't know, it depends on how well Lalo rewards incompetence, but he might have $100,000 in his pocket. I could see Saul going and spending half of that on a brand new Cadillac.
Especially if his wife breaks up with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Some love life crisis.
Oh, sort yeah. Of absolutely. Response. I wonder if Saul would have been in as bad of shape as he is later on if Mike had just spelled him on one of the bags periodically.
Look, Mike's 112 years old.
He has one empty shoulder. I don't care how old he is. He has one empty shoulder that he could carry money with.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know. His bones are basically dust at this point. I don't know that I want this old man carrying a 75-pound bag of money.
Just saying. Maybe I wouldn't have had to see Bob Odenkirk be such a fucking baby later.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. We'll talk about that. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I did too.
So later that night, they set up camp, and Saul reveals to Mike that he told Kim what he's up to. Mike's worried that she'll tell someone when he doesn't come home. Saul doesn't think she will, and Mike pulls out this space blanket, but Saul refuses to use it, which I absolutely love. I think, you know, it's just showing the remnants of Chuck rattling around in Saul's head.
Absolutely. He vehemently does not want this Mylar cheat. Yeah. Upon his skin. Mike says a lot of borderline sexist stuff, I think.
Yeah, he's an Kim. Old B cop. He's,
yeah, I know.
That's,
it's just,
that's Mike, yeah.
The fucking, the book club, really? It's her mom, really? I don't have either of those things. I'm a woman. What the hell? I'm a married woman, even.
Yep.
I don't know. That rubbed me the wrong way. Sorry.
I feel you. You know, Mike is not the most PC character in the world.
Oh, no, sure. Of course not. I wouldn't expect him to be. He is a grandpa, after all.
Yeah.
There is no PC grandpa.
A retired cop. Those people tend to have a certain perspective on the world.
Mm-hmm. Remarkably similar to Lalo's.
Next up, Kim goes to the jail to ask Lalo what happened to Saul. And she explains that she's his wife, and Lalo tells her not to worry because Saul's a survivor, you know, like a cockroach. Like a cucaracha, which... I just love the Spanish word for cockroach.
It's fun.
It's such a fun word to say. There's a whole song devoted to the cockroach.
There is. It's true.
Mm-hmm. I'm worried that Kim got herself in real, real deep here.
I can understand her reasoning for doing this, but also now they know.
Borderline. I borderline understand her. Like, okay. Yes, your husband has been potentially murdered and or kidnapped by the cartel. But he's a bad husband. And he's only just your husband.
What are you saying? That she just cut her losses?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
I think so at this point.
I should have at least waited a day. I think Lalo's right about that. He has a
cockroach. Was this the same day Was this like she got home from work, Jimmy wasn't there, and she went over to see him?
No, I think it was the next morning.
Oh, he right, because they wait in the desert for a night, yeah.
Yeah, and he says, so he didn't come home last night or something like that.
Okay.
In case you didn't know and didn't look it up, what Lalo said in Spanish there, he said, a blonde, good for him.
Okay. Why?
I don't know. Because...
Lalo's a fan of blondes, I guess.
Who isn't? Let's be real.
I mean, I'm more of a fan of dark-haired women, but...
Points for me. There was a lot of body language stuff in this scene that was just very dismissive slash kind of trying to be intimidating. Which isn't surprising. That's his thing.
Oh, I mean, that's his go-to with everybody. And, you know, he doesn't know Kim from Adam, so.
I don't even know that he completely believes her story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because she knows who he is. Again, she could just be some person that the cops hired to come in. She could be a cop herself.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that she knows who he is, I think, helps. But also in a weird way, doesn't.
Yeah.
Because he's surprised that Saul said anything.
Yeah.
To put it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back out to the desert where Mike doesn't make much water, but Saul makes a lot of water into his bottle to save it for later. And they continue their forever walk under the hot desert sun. They stop to drink a cap full of water, and they continue on with Jimmy deciding to drag the money bags behind them. This is a turning point in the episode. A fatal mistake, if you will.
Dragging instead of carrying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so.
Things- I mean, Jimmy was ready to lie down and die at the end of this, so...
Fair. I mean, I guess past a certain point when you've been carrying something on your shoulders for so long, just a different kind of pain is probably a relief.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Just using different muscles. I've never actually been able to remember the difference in spelling between desert and dessert. And this show is going to change that.
What?
I've had to type desert so many times
in
this outline.
Gotcha.
That I now will forever remember Desert 1S, Desert 2.
Hmm.
So I guess thanks, Better Call Saul. Thanks, Vince Gilligan. Thanks, Peter Gould. Thanks to all the writers for putting them out in the desert, because now I remember this finally.
Well, good. I'm glad that it was this that really cemented the knowledge in your brain. I always knew the difference, but I'm special.
Some of us have mental problems.
Hey, I have mental problems too, just different ones.
Hey, how dare you suggest I don't have mental problems?
Sir.
So, of course, the money bag spring a leak. And so does Saul's toe when he catches it on a cactus. Ugh. He wants to give up and die, but Mike tells him that he can't give up because he needs to continue providing for Stacy and Kaylee. And sort of insinuates, surely you have someone. Might actually care about you, right?
You just told me you had someone last night, yeah, don't you remember?
Told him he had a wife, not that the wife cared about him. So the guy who's looking for them shows up again. So Saul grabs the space blanket and uses it to get his attention, hoping that Mike can kill the guy and they can steal his car. And it works, but the car is completely destroyed in the process. And Saul decides to drink his own piss and then they continue walking.
His dude brew, his him water.
I half expected at the end of this episode for him to just be chugging that bottle of piss and then for Gus to roll up, having tracked them with the gas cap and saving the day, and him having drank his piss for no damn reason.
That would have been perfect.
Which would have been great. I do, however, love, like, they're really developing the character of Saul. All of these stories that Saul has told about, like, I caught my second ex-wife sleeping with my stepdad, and like all this crazy shit that we're now finding out is totally true, to kind of stack. I once drank my own piss in the desert on top of that is such a good layering of just hilarity and patheticness and sadness, all of it.
I had to use my silk tie as a water bottle strap.
Mm-hmm.
I used my Tavis and Maine water bottle for pee. My pee-pee bottle.
It's so good.
It's very good. There are so many little details in this episode, which are not interesting to recount on a podcast, I would say, but were beautifully executed and so much fun. The cactus thing. This fucking idiot.
You're watching him reach into it thinking, ooh, watch your fingers.
And he
successfully plucks it and you're like, oh, whew. And then, yeah, his toe.
Also, I must say, the most sprightly that he moves in this episode is when he's chasing down those loose bills. He moves quickly. That is so Saul. Yeah. And also him dragging this money through the desert is very Saul. It's it's an anecdote, or not an anecdote, a metaphor for something.
Yeah. A metaphor for a greedy man.
His whole fucking life.
Yeah. What'd you think of Mike's little speech here? Because, like, we know. And that's why, like, this isn't super mind-blowing or revelatory for me, because we know all of this stuff about Mike, right? And I mean, I guess it's nice to hear him say it aloud to another human being, but also I don't really know that he needed that moment. It doesn't change my perspective on Mike at all. This episode maybe slightly adjusts my perspective on Saul, but not a ton. Certainly not. You know, in episodes like the one where he starts throwing bowling balls on Howard's car, or like, you know, chicanery, things like that. Those are like mind-blowing episodes, in my opinion. But this is kind of what I would expect from these characters.
It is nice to see Mike get his own kind of dramatic moment. He doesn't get a lot of those emotional moments because he's just not very emotional other than angry.
Right.
He's mad. We know that, but we don't get to see him actually feeling things for his family.
Like there's the moment where he shouts at Kaylee and you sort of go, wow, that was that betrayed, you know, so much about what he's feeling and thinking in the moment.
It's a still waters run deep kind of thing. I agree that it was not super necessary and didn't change what I know about that character at all.
Enjoyable to watch certainly.
He pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
He had me believe in him. The only character I feel like I had any change in heart around was Kim in this episode.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Not change in heart, but I feel like I know more about her now.
Mm-hmm. What do you think this meant to Saul? I mean, he's obviously got to be thinking about Kim in those moments, right? And when he gets up off the dirt and goes out into and kind of just, you know, concocts this plan. I don't know why Mike didn't think of this earlier to try and shoot this guy and take his car. But, you know, Saul concocts the plan and sort of just gives Mike the nod, and Mike springs into action. He was on the verge of giving up. He was ready to just lay down in the desert and die until Mike gave this speech to him about, you know, surely you have somebody who cares about you, essentially, is what he's saying. That's why I continue on. And I mean, Jimmy's got to be thinking about Kim in this scene, which is why he gets up and goes and does his thing. He's either going to die here, you know, cowering in the dirt, trying to avoid this guy who wants to kill him, or he's going to get up and try and fight back and maybe see Kim again.
I don't even know that he is thinking about Kim in this scene. I think this is going all the way back to his ego again. Mike is saying, look at me. I'm the oldest man on the planet, and I am doing okay, and I have reasons to keep going. I'm virtuous in this very specific way where I will do everything I can for my family, and I can die knowing that I did that. I think Saul is thinking more, this can't be happening. This dynamic sucks. I'm better than this. I don't know that he is thinking about Kim that much, but that might just be my cynicism peeking through.
I mean, I'm definitely looking for like the big change, the big shift, right? Because like, I could see a Saul who goes out to the desert and has this experience and then comes back with a new focus on the relationship. And I could also see simultaneously that not working because Kim has a new detachment from the relationship. And it would be sort of delicious, those sort of role reversals here. But yeah, I guess I could also see Jimmy just deciding, like, this is not how I'm going to die. I've got $7 million. I've got more money than I've ever seen in my life. You think back to, like, what he did with the, what was it, the Wasserman, the Wesselman, the Kesselmans?
Yes.
Kesslers?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Shit, I can't think of their name.
No, it's all of that.
In season one.
They have four names.
Yeah. The Luftwaffens. Oh. Yeah, we'll get to that email later. And they had $1.6 million, right? And he's got mm-hmm. it in a bag, and he's thinking, God, I could skip town with this. It would be so easy. I could just go on the run, and I'd never have to work again. Here he's got, you know, five times that. So the temptation, I don't think it's a temptation to steal this money, but I think it is like a driver. Like, look at the spoils here. If I can just get off the ground, if I can just make it out into the street and Mike can do his job, we might get out of this, and I might be rich eventually.
Right.
So, yeah, I could definitely see him thinking that. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he's thinking of Kim in this moment after this big pep talk from Mike.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong.
Your face when you said that was so dejected. It's very sweet.
But I don't want Saul to be that bad, but I know he's going to be that bad.
Yeah, I don't want him to be that bad either. I'm just saying I think he is, mm-hmm. is the problem.
Yeah, I like to think he drinks his own piss because he loves Kim, not because he loves money.
Not because he loves himself or hates himself and loves himself at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad news.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. All right, let's get into feedback. If you would like to send in your feedback for next week's consideration, you can do so at bettercallsaul@baldmove.com. That's the email address. The first email this week is from Jamie. She has a quick question. I don't know. Jamie's ambiguous. Quick question, which you may have had before. Could you see Tony Dalton, who plays Lalo Salamanca, in the role of Oberyn Martell? And Jamie is, of course, speaking of the Game of Thrones character.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa, could you see Pedro Pascal, who plays Oberyn, playing the role of Lalo Salamanca?
There is a physicality to Tony Dalton that definitely lends itself to the character of Lalo. I feel like he has to have more weight to him,
mm-hmm.
both physically and just the way he positions his body, where Pedro Pascal feels more like a more roguish, but not a murderer in that way.
Okay.
Although I guess Oberyn Martell is also a murderer.
He is also a murderer.
I want Tony Dalton in both roles.
Okay. I don't know. I have a hard time seeing Oberyn as anyone other than Pedro Pascal, because there's something in Tony Dalton that's just a little too fun, a little too playful. Oberyn Martell was playful in dialogue, but not in attitude.
Yeah.
Whereas Tony Dalton's portrayal of Lalo here is more playful in attitude. And I think he could probably pull it off. I mean, he's an actor, mm-hmm. for God's sake. I don't think like you could take Lalo from this show and put him into Game of Thrones and switch them around and they would work.
I don't know. I think there's a darkness behind the stuff that Lalo mm-hmm. does, because that the playfulness is a little bit real, but it's also a veneer over the brooding, planning, calculating kind of character. So yeah. if he pulled more of that forward,
mm-hmm.
if he were as brooding as he were playful currently, maybe he could be a good Oberyn.
Okay.
But you're right. Pedro is perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Don't change them. Casting.
Don't go back and remake Game of Thrones without Pedro Pascal.
Casting people are paid to do that job for a reason. They know what they're doing.
All right, let's see if Jane knows what she's doing next up. I don't know, ambiguous. We're going to call all these names ambiguous.
They.
All right, they write in and say, I don't know if you've covered this before, but do you think there's any significance to the fact that Gus's Drug Front is a fast food chain of all things? Not totally unlike meth. It's cheap, accessible, bad for you, and taking a major toll nationwide on the well-being of low-income people and in turn the healthcare system. Is the Villa Gang making some kind of low-key statement here, or am I overthinking it?
One, how dare you? Chicken is delicious. Two, no, I could also totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
If I know the Villa Gang, I would say that they just thought it was funny that this meth kingpin would run
a chicken shack.
This just really silly chicken shack. Like, you know, most meth kingpins are chopping people's heads off, and he's chopping chicken heads off, right? Like, they just saw, like, probably some of the similarities, maybe some of the ones you mentioned, it being cheap and sort of bad for you. And, but yeah, I would think more it was just, it'd be funny if this, you know, really well-off guy was just running a chicken shack.
There are several details in Breaking Bad that lean toward the ridiculous on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like Walter White and his Walter Whiteys, mm-hmm. his Tidy Whiteys.
Yep.
His Tidy Walter Whiteys. I'll get there someday. Other things? Blood tubs.
I mean, Jesse.
Jesse, just all Jesse of Jesse.
As a human being in the first three seasons. Yeah, two.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely like to have fun, and that's probably one bit of it. You know what's not fun? The Luftwaffe.
Mm.
Let's talk about it. Fabian writes in, wants to be our official German advisor for German-related matters and concerns. And I think he can be. He wrote in a Bible. I'm going to paraphrase some of it and then read some more interesting details. He agreed with us that a brand name like Luftwaffe would never work in Germany. It would be considered at least vulgar, if not revisionist. And that brings him to the next point he wanted to make, which I found interesting. When you look at Gustavo Fring is a German last name. And as we've pointed out, the showrunners pay a lot of attention to details, so he's convinced that they picked a German last name to give Fring a special background. Since the mid-1800s, many Germans have migrated to Chile. I'm going to say it like that the entire time, so get used to it. So there still exists a minority of about 500,000 Chileno Alemanes, is how I'm going to say that.
Let me look at that word. Yeah, you got it. All right. You struggled to get there, but you got it.
During the Nazi time, thousands of refugees fled to Chile, only to be followed by as many followers as Hitler after the war. At the beginning of the 1960s, lay preacher Paul Schaffer, lay preacher, I don't know what a lay preacher is. Do you?
I know what a layman is, and I can extrapolate from there.
Like, not professional preacher. It's like a guy who goes around carrying a literal soapbox and standing on it and shouting at people in the streets.
I mean, somebody, maybe somebody who hasn't been officially designated a preacher.
Okay. Yeah, his name is Paul Schaffer. He emigrated to Chile with around 200 cult followers and founded the Colonia Dignidad at Parral, in which there were numerous violations of human rights. I could see Fring growing up in one of these communities, maybe as an adopted or abducted child in Colonia Dignidad, or in a...
Can't be saying that right.
Dignidad?
No, man. That's a hard G.
Dig.
In Spanish.
Dignidad.
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 Dignidad, or probably.
Dignidad.
Your mom's a Dignidad.
Or a dyed-in-the-wool Nazi family. I'm very curious when and if we will ever hear more about his past, but that is part of the fun, isn't it?
Still got to hear about Santiago.
Yes. Yeah. And that was interesting to me to find out. And I think you actually mentioned this. I can't remember if you mentioned it on the podcast or to me afterward. That yeah, there were a lot of actual immigrants, German immigrants in Chile after the war, which, you know, you're talking about this guy named Peter Schuler. Peter Schuler. That's definitely a German last name. He's definitely a German. He speaks German. And we know that he had a relationship, a very intimate relationship with Gus, and helped him out. So yeah, I'm super curious to see what that background is. And I do hope we get more of it.
Me too.
Next up, Vince. They say, what do you think of that idea that Kim is killed by the cartel, possibly as a retribution for something Saul does or fails to do? Thought about this after last week's episode. Would still play into the idea that Gene picks Omaha for a reason. If Kim is from Nebraska, she would be buried there as well. I know this is extreme, but was curious as to your thoughts. You have any thoughts on Kim potentially getting offed?
I think the thing that you have to consider with this universe of shows in particular is what would be the worst thing to happen. And I don't know that her dying would actually be the worst thing.
Okay.
So
for Saul, for Jimmy, right?
For everyone. Yeah. But specifically for the tortured main character. Yes.
Yeah. And he's already had one death that he's failed to deal with appropriately or in any healthy fashion. And so I feel like if you tack on another death, it's somehow he's already desensitized to that kind of trauma. He knows how to put up shields to that kind of trauma and just sort of ignore that pain. Whereas he might not be able to ignore so successfully the pain of Kim choosing to leave him.
Yeah.
I really think that's where it's headed. I think Kim is going to have to leave and she's going to have to make that choice. I could see definitely the cartel getting more involved here, especially after this week's episode. And maybe Saul trying to make a sacrifice for her to get her out of that life. But at some point, this relationship has got to break. I really don't believe they're together in Better Call or in Breaking Bad. She's never mentioned, she's never even hinted at, and this relationship is just going nowhere good.
Absolutely. She's drawn her line in the sand at the very beginning of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it, boy, does he cross it. He crosses a couple lines.
Yeah.
Country lines. What do you call that? Borders. That's what they're called. Borders. Crosses a line, crosses a border.
Also, are you really going to want to kiss a mouthful of piss?
I know my answer to that, but maybe I'm not as kinky as other people.
I don't know that Kim gets down that way. Doesn't seem like the type. But who knows? All right, Maria is up next. Maria writes in to say, ask the question about, you know, what we think is going to happen with Kim, which we just sort of talked about. So they got one other question here, which is also, how do you think they're going to get out of the desert?
I like your idea that Gus is going to track them down with the cap.
The gas cap. Yeah. I know you have to be in range of a few miles for those things to work. So, but on the other hand, Mike was sent out here by Gus. There's no way Mike is doing this on his own. So Gus would know about how long it would take. He'd know where Mike is roughly in a few miles radius, especially now that they're back on the main road. I think they're going to be able to pretty quickly get picked up by Gus.
At the very least, they'll get within cell service soon.
Now, when I say picked up by Gus, I don't mean Gus is going to drive up in a black SUV and say, get in the car. It's not going to happen because we know that Saul has never met Gus. He just knows a guy who knows a guy.
Yeah.
So Victor will probably pull up to pick them up, or Tyrus, one of the two.
Yeah, that would be my thought. And we know, by the way, that they are in New Mexico already.
Yeah.
Because of the filter.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about the color filters they use to denote Mexico versus...
Yeah, at the well, they had the straw filter on, but then pretty much every scene after that, they haven't. So
yeah,
they're in, I believe, the leg of New Mexico, which is Hidalgo County.
Hmm. Okay.
New Mexico is a big square, except for one little bit. It's like a little stumpy leg.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're in the leg bit.
Did you find the well?
I did not find the well, no, but I found the state road and all that. Stuffs.
There might be a lot of dollar bills out there just sort of strewn across the desert.
What are we doing? Bills. We gotta go.
All right. Well, we got one more email before we can go. It's from David. It says, I had a few things I was curious about that might make for good discussion. When Saul put on the space blanket and acted as bait, why didn't he run for cover in the rocks to lure the driver out of the Bronco? Mike could have shot the driver after he parked the vehicle, and then Mike and Saul could have drove home. My guess on that is he just didn't think of it. Like, this is a man who's severely dehydrated, who's on death's door,
and is just desperate. He was just screaming about how done he was. I'm done!
Yeah.
Done! Mood.
Yeah.
Big mood.
So I really don't think he had it in his brain what he was going to do here, other than attract the attention of this guy and Mike's going to shoot him.
Also, it's way better for them to have this disappointment on top of all the other disappointments they've had that day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. David continues, also, any ideas on who these hijackers were and who would have leaked the information about the meeting? We don't know much about any rival gangs other than the Salamancas and Frings group. Are we going to get introduced to a new group of bad guys nearing the end of the series, a la Team Panzer Grey or the neo-Nazis in Breaking Bad? That's a good question. So we see the guy inside the cartel's operations calling somebody at the beginning of this episode.
But we don't know who he called.
Right. So this could be a rival gang. This could be element, like a faction within the cartel that has been, you know, sort of champing at the bit to take Eladio down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Or this, I don't know. Maybe this is coming directly from Eladio. I don't really know.
Maybe. I mean, Lalo made a point to mention that he has a lot of competition.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be willing to believe that it's another faction within the cartel that maybe wants to, because Don Hector is out of commission, basically. Lalo is in North America. They maybe have heard that he's in prison.
Yeah.
So maybe they're thinking that this is their time. Yeah.
Smell the blood in the water. Yeah.
Sharks, all of them.
For sure.
Desert sharks.
And finally, was Lalo really going to let Saul go without picking up the money? He seemed way too nonchalant about letting Saul walk away. With all Saul knows, I assumed if he really does turn down Lalo, he's a dead man. I don't know. You're probably right. I think this was a moment where maybe Saul dodged a bullet by turning around and demanding $100,000. Because, I was surprised by his nonchalance as well. Like, I'll call you. If I need anything, I'll call you.
I think it might have been a ploy because Saul had already basically done this little song and dance once before, but ended up naming a price anyway. I think he was just trying to get him to name his price. Like, all right, yeah, we'll see.
Uh-huh.
See how not money hungry you are, you fuck.
Yeah, could be. And maybe if he gets out of that room, Lalo gives him, a day? 2 days to change his mind. Two days to come back with an offer.
Yeah.
I don't know. Law's probably getting impatient sitting in jail while he knows the money is out there to be picked up to get him out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. That's it for the episode, this week's podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Of course, going to be back next week.
Yep.
Only two more episodes left in this season. And I hear, don't get too hyped because people got way hyped on this episode.
Yeah.
But I hear that they're going to be real, real good. So I'm super excited for the end of this season. I'm waiting for the fallout of all of this to see how Kim and Jimmy's relationship is affected, to see where Kim and the cartel's relationship goes now, all that kind of stuff. Super
excited.
They've been
pushing and pushing and pushing this entire season, and kind of the season before this too, just twisting the screws.
Yeah.
Something's got to give, and when it does, it will do so, I would hope, spectacularly. So I'm also quite excited.
Yeah, the show is spectacular from time to time.
It's a slow burn, but when you get to it, boy, it's good.
All right. That's it for this week. Until next week, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And see you then.
Bye.